content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Maureen McDonald from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2018 Walter Magazine. And we begin at the table with The Muffin Woman, Annabelle Commissar's English Muffin Operation by Dean McCord. English muffin might make you think of a dry, mass-produced bread product with nooks and crannies. It's rarely the star of the show, subordinated to a second-tier role sopped in the runny yolks of an Eggs Benedict or as a quick butter-carrying vehicle to grab for satiation. In fact, English muffins weren't even invented in England. They were first called toaster crumpets by Samuel Bath Thomas, a British expat living in New York City. Freshly baked English muffins, on the other hand, bear little resemblance to the aforementioned, particularly when they are baked by Annabel Commissar, owner of the newly opened Michael's English Muffins in North Raleigh. Commissar's muffins are thick and fluffy, redolent of yeast and butter and tender care. That last ingredient is an ethos instilled in Commissar by her late restaurateur father, Michael. She's continuing his legacy, one muffin at a time. Michael Commissar was a legend in the restaurant world. His family's Cincinnati establishment, the Maisonette, was a classic, old-school, luxurious French restaurant with formal service and tableside cooking. It still holds the record for receiving a 5-star mobile travel guide, now the Forbes Travel Guide, rating for 41 consecutive years. Mobile referred to the Maisonette as one of the few flawless dining experiences in the country. Alas, the economy and changes in dining habits caused the Maisonette to close in 2005. Annabelle's given name is the same as her father's, Michael. But unlike him, she never planned on a career in the food industry. She went to Parsons School of Design, graduating with a degree in design management and business. While working in fashion with Hugo Boss in New York, Commissar realized she may have had more of her father in her than she thought. She started to manage a restaurant part-time, which convinced her she wanted to be back in the industry full-time. She moved back to Cincinnati and eventually started working at one of the family's establishments. It didn't quite suit Commissar, and so she began to consider other options, with her father's blessing. "I asked Dad if he'd still be proud of me if I didn't stay in the restaurant," she says. He supported her wholeheartedly. Commissar moved on to a Cincinnati bakery that made not only wood-fired bread, but also fresh English muffins. She enjoyed the time there, but life as a baker still didn't take. What did was her understanding of what a made-from-scratch, freshly baked English muffin could be. In 2014, Commissar moved to North Carolina to work with the wine distributor. Selling wine was fine, but it was even more fun when Commissar brought snacks, particularly homemade English muffins. "I'd bring my English muffins to wine tastings," Commissar says. "I would bake them on a portable griddle on the balcony of my apartment." Folks in the local food scene began to hear about these muffins, and a cult following ensued. Commissar decided to go into business for herself, selling her muffins. In December 2015, on the first anniversary of her father's death, she started her wholesale baked good business, Michael's English Muffins. She rented out a certified kitchen, working from 11 p.m. to 9 a.m., mixing and baking English muffins when not selling wine. Hometown connections helped her find her first restaurant customer, the Counting House in Durham's 21C Hotel. Josh Munchel, the opening chef at Counting House, is from Cincinnati and an acquaintance of Commissar's. "I was invoice number one," Munchel says. "I knew biscuits were a thing here in the South, but not English muffins, and I wanted to do something different." "And Commissar's version is top-notch," Munchel says, "and the right amount of indulgent. The taste, it's almost like a donut, donut-esque, but you feel like you're eating healthy when you're eating an English muffin." These English muffins should probably not be considered health food, but they are made with good stuff. Made of a simple dough of flour, yeast, salt, olive oil, and water, the muffins are slowly baked on a flat top with clarified butter or ghee and locally sourced cornmeal. The final product is soft and moist, yet full of the fluffy air bubbles needed for all sorts of toppings, or for a breakfast sandwich, which Munchel routinely served at the Counting House. "They're fine on their own, too," says Munchel. "I just put a muffin in a dry, cast-iron skillet, uncut, because the amount of butter in it does the work for you. The amount of funness is already there." Jeff Sizer, chef and co-owner of Raleigh's Royale restaurant, takes the sandwich concept one step further. "They're the best things ever. As soon as I tasted one, I said, 'Oh, that's what we're doing for our burger.'" Thus, the Royale burger was born. Juicy beef and Gruyere cheese served in between Commissar's lightly sweet, yeasty muffin. Despite her success with the wholesale operations, Commissar still felt like she hadn't fully committed to the business. She hearkened back to her bakery experience and considered opening a brick-and-mortar outpost. After months of planning and research, Commissar opened her flagship store in January, tucked in a small strip mall behind a hotel just off Capitol Boulevard in North Raleigh. The location may be off the beaten path, but it's worth finding the place. Bags of muffins are available to take home, but this is also a restaurant. English muffins, including a sweet potato and cinnamon version, along with the original plain flavor, can be served warm, fresh off the griddle, and topped with a variety of options, including local honey butter, Nutella, jam, or Annabelle's childhood favorite, peanut butter and cinnamon sugar. Her father regularly made these for her using commercial English muffins, and he called them scoozies. Savory toppings such as pimento cheese are also available. And of course, Michaels understands the muffin's worth in sandwiches, whether with bacon, sausage, cheese, or egg for breakfast, or turkey, bacon, avocado, and tomato for lunch. It's a bold claim, but one taste of these warm, rich muffins might just make you rethink everything you've ever known about English muffins. Here, they're the star of the show. And in Destination Walter, Art of the Craft, Pendland School of Crafts preserves a place for serious study by Jonathan Ammons. When you catch it on a perfect western North Carolina day, you round the bend on the approach road to Pendland School of Crafts to see a handful of buildings grazing like cattle across a distant hillside. They are of many different architectural styles across many different eras, and ideally, they'll be accented by a bit of fog lingering in the valley. The hillside oasis is a Tolkien-esque. For thousands of artists and creatives from all over the world, this century-old school is indeed a fairy tale. A respite from the real world, a place to unplug. It is also a celebrated North Carolina training ground for craftspeople, a place to focus on creating rather than just producing art. It is the Pendland School of Crafts, but the way I look at the word crafts is not so much wood whittling and pottery, although we do that kind of thing too, but it is more craft in the sense of well-made objects with a very conscious way of creating art, says Mia Hall, newly appointed director of the school. Hall arrived in January from the University of Arkansas, where she developed a thriving furniture design and contemporary crafts program, and she has a slight Swedish accent lilting through certain syllables. She is right at home in this removed southern retreat because she is among leaders in the arts from all over the world. There are courses on most major craft practices: ceramics, woodworking, weaving, jewelry making, and metalwork. There are also always creative offerings, such as bicycle building. This semester, one of the weirder things we're offering is a custom-made jeans class, Hall says. They're going to make their own blue jeans. Founded in 1923 by Lucy Morgan to teach area women skills for earning money from home, Penland started as a weaving school before expanding its horizons. Morgan hoped Penland would be a place to foster the joy of creative occupation and a certain togetherness, working with one another in creating the good and the beautiful. When Bill Brown took over in 1962, he began pushing the institution in an aggressive new direction, creating an artist residency program and expanding the amount of classes, subjects, and the length of those courses. By the time Jean McLaughlin became the director in 1998, Penland was beginning to gain a reputation as not just a home for American folk traditions, but also as an incubator for innovative artists to truly master the details of their craft. McLaughlin continued to grow the school and its endowment to secure it as a stalwart in the arts community before retiring in 2017. At Penland, students apply to take a single 8-week course as their concentration during the year, and there are smaller 2-week summer sessions that focus on specific aspects of each craft. McLaughlin continued to grow the school and its endowment to secure it as a stalwart in the arts community before retiring in 2017. We are constantly out there looking and seeing what is going on, and if there is an artist that pops up, we bring them in, says Hall. If you look at the contact hours, one Penland 2-week session is the same as one semester at a college. Even when Penland is not in session, there are artists working year-round in studio spaces within the 57 buildings scattered across the 420-acre campus. With nearly 1,400 visitors every year, the grounds are a mountain wonderland for anyone to wander and observe. There's also a gallery of students' work open to the public every Saturday. That focused curriculum draws and even cultivates some serious artists. When I came to Penland, I fell in love with the place and everything about it, says Elizabeth Brim, who wandered into the school in the early 80s as a printmaker, only to become one of the most well-respected blacksmiths in the nation while working as the school's iron studio coordinator for nearly a decade. She's come into her own at Penland. When I told my mother that I was taking blacksmithing classes, she told me that she did not approve of that, and that it was not a ladylike thing to do. So Brim began wearing a string of pearls when she would work, a look she keeps up to this day, glimmers of white poking through soot and ash from the forge. Brim is known as a master of the craft. Among her accolades are the Alex W. Beeler Award from the Artist Blacksmith Association of North America, a prestigious Lifetime Achievement Award. Brim is also known for artistically pushing the envelope. She says she has found her style in traditional blacksmithing techniques that she likes to twist around to make something different. Take, for example, delicate flower petals made from black iron and hammered thin. a draping apron with dangling straps, or her most famous piece, hand-forged high-heeled shoes. She even invented a technique using compressed air to inflate metal in order to make an iron pillow for her iron tiara to perch. Somehow, in all that hammering and flame, Bream creates pieces that are as rugged as they are feminine and elegant. Metalworker Seth Gould has found inspiration and edification at Penland, too. I will be learning for the rest of my life, whether it be a brand new technique or learning how to forge a certain material in a certain way, Gould says. While building spectacularly sexy tools, sleek, curvy, finessed hammers and measuring squares and calipers pays the bills, he has a particular fascination with obscure and lost trades. Gould's studio is filled with ornate and complex locks, cleavers, boxes, and even a duck press. They are all crafted in classic styles, but with their own particular aesthetic. As an artist in residence, Gould has spent the better part of the last 3 years developing puzzle boxes, an old Japanese and European Renaissance tradition of handcrafted lock boxes, intricately designed to require users to move through a series of steps to open the box. No one has made these in a very long time, so there's certainly no how-to manual, he laughs, while showing off the skeleton of a box the size of a suitcase. Building them must be much more of a puzzle for him as unlocking them is for the rest of us. 10 locks flex with the turn of a single key. Each one, and every nut, bolt, lever, hinge, and screw, having been meticulously forged, polished, and crafted by hand. By the time this is finished, it will require 10 to 12 steps before you can even open this box, he says. There is no market for these, but that's why I'm here, to make one. Sometimes you have to make the thing before people understand that it can be made, or that it needs to be made. Art is problem-solving, Hall says, explaining the remarkable 90-year staying power of this woodland school. Penland will remain because it is a place both idyllic and practical to cultivate creative thinking. The arts are everywhere. Art is a part of your entire existence. We need it as much as we need cancer research. And from the Art Town section, a few years ago, William Winters might not have imagined he'd be employed, much less a local entrepreneur. A few milestones later, namely overcoming addiction and living sober, he's giving back to the community through a simple act, a haircut. Born and raised in Raleigh, Winters had a brief stint on the basketball team at North Carolina Central University, as well as in the United States Navy. Along the way, he says, he experienced homelessness and suffered from addiction. After a few years on the streets and encounters with the law, I finally looked in the mirror and had to snap back to reality, says Winters. He went to a rehabilitation center a decade ago and has been sober ever since. With his feet back on the ground, 2 years ago, Winters opened his own business, a barber shop called Mr. Groom Room. It began as a one-man show on Wake Forest Road. Business was good, and within a year, he expanded and moved to his current location, just off of New Bern Avenue. Today, his shop is right across the street from the ABC store. Winters says the proximity underlines his full-circle journey. I slept under the tree over there for 2 years. Winter says he hopes to expand his space in the coming year, and while he continues to grow his team and business, he hasn't forgotten his path and always strives to give back. Every Sunday, he says, he opens the shop to give free haircuts to the homeless. I know what it feels like to get a haircut when you're in that situation. It gives you a sense of confidence. That same confidence has paid off for Winters. He's one of the newest recipients of the Sports Shop Radio's Salute to Champions, along with community members like former Durham Mayor Bill Bell. He's also just been recognized as a 2018 honoree at the Celebrating Life Jazz Brunch in Greensboro, which acknowledges folks who have overcome challenges. While his latest activities have included receiving accolades for his transformation and community work, he says he really likes his day-in, day-out priority. I just like to cut hair. And in the Raleigh Now spotlight, Lost and Found, Raleigh woman researches and recovers her family's stolen art from World War II by Catherine Curran. Raleighite Alexandra Cardarelli didn't know much about her grandmother's history other than the fact that she lived through the Holocaust. After seeing a TV ad about millions of stolen life insurance policies during that time, something sparked, and Cardarelli began to investigate if her grandparents had been impacted. In the two decades since, Cardarelli has unearthed family treasure. Her great-grandparents, the Newmans of Vienna, Austria, had most of their belongings confiscated by Nazis in 1938. Years ago, Cardarelli says her grandmother was told most of their things and valuables were burned. As it turns out, a piece of 17th century art, The Invaded Poultry House, by Adrian van Utrecht and Jacob Jordaens, had survived. To find the painting, Cardarelli spent hours over years researching in the National Archives. I picked up where my great-grandmother had left off in the early 1960s. My family was reluctant. This period in history wasn't talked about by the Jews, but I just kept digging. With the help of the Monuments Men Foundation, which had recovered the art in the 1940s and 1950s, Cardarelli eventually tracked down the painting in the basement of a museum in Linz, Austria. This museum is home to the largest collection of stolen World War II art, and is also the site where Hitler planned to open a museum filled with the stolen works. The painting was returned to the family in 2003 and underwent repairs and restoration at the National Gallery Conservation Center. Cardarelli wanted to share the art with the public, but its 7 by 10 foot dimensions prove a challenge. I worked for decades to find a museum to have the painting on loan. It's so big, it was a problem for a lot of museums. North Carolina Museum of Art curator Dennis Weller had the perfect spot. The work is now on display in the Northern European Collection, where it will remain on loan through next year. Cardarelli researches other families' stolen objects from the Holocaust in her spare time, she says, and she hopes this success inspires others to research their own relatives. It may be a needle in the haystack, but everyone needs to know that you can't give up. In the Raleigh Now calendar, we have Shine On. In 2013, Steve Martin and Edie Brickell collaborated on the Grammy-winning bluegrass album Love Has Come For You. Their combined star power fueled Bright Star, a musical inspired by the album. Set in the Blue Ridge Mountains post-World War II, the play follows the life story of journalist Alice Murphy. North Carolina Theater and Broadway series South brings this down-home production to local audiences for the first time, April 17th through the 22nd. With settings in Asheville, Zebulon, Chapel Hill, and Raleigh, this star will shine brightly for Carolinians. Visit nctheater.com/shows/brightstar for more information. Tickets are $23 to $82. In the Triangle Now calendar, You can follow the Mellow Brick Road. Follow, 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 follow me to Fuquay Varina Concert Series, featuring Band of Oz, April 26. The heart of downtown will pulse with the shimmying and shagging to the North Carolina Hall of Fame honored band, the Wizards of Carolina Beach Music. Concertgoers can enjoy local brews and food trucks while their munchkins retreat to a designated kid zone. Not welcome, coolers, wicked witches, and your little dog, too. Fuquay Varina is not some far-off fairy tale land, so why not ease on down the road? The event is the 26th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. in Fuquay Varina. Visit fuquayvarina.org for more information. And for the dazed and enthused, the 2018 Spring Days Arts and Crafts Festival celebrates 25 years of art, food, and fun at Bond Park in Cary, April 28th. Spring Days features over 170 artists displaying everything from paintings, photography, and sculpture to furniture, folk art, and jewelry. It's a feast for the eyes and mouth as well, with food vendors galore to satisfy any craving. Spring Days also offers visitors opportunities to participate in a bit of artful play. There's a children's village for young explorers, a sports zone, and other sponsored activities to engage the mind and body, including Florafitty, a public art-making project. Get lost in the haze of this creative daze. The event is the 28th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and it's free in Cary. Visit townofcary.org for more information. Or you can second that emotion. The Motown rhythm and blues legend Smokey Robinson returns to the Durham Performing Arts Center for an intimate one-night-only engagement, April 29th. His storied career spans five decades, and his hit music continues to provide the soundtrack to our lives. Don't miss Smokey. He's a true miracle. The event is the 29th at 7:30. Tickets are $65 to $135. Visit deepacnc.com for more information. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.